Morning and welcome to our morning Bible study. Today is Friday, 19th June, 2020, and we are officially in the kingship of David. Hooray! David's the king. David's the king. We've been waiting a long time for this. All of 1 Samuel and here, 4 chapters of 2 Samuel, but we're finally here. David is the king, and we're in verses 6 through 16 of 2 Samuel chapter 5. I'm not even going to ask you to read this ahead because we're going to go through this material and we're going to make, I'm going to comment on it as we go through. Remember, try to identify your W's as you go along. If I remember it, I will point those out. But that's one of the things that everybody needs to begin to work on and do on their own is you need to internalize these habits. And that's part of becoming a good reader is when you know you're being a good reader is when you read something and you haven't actively sat down and written out your 5 W's: who, what, where, why, when. And when you do that. When you're and when you haven't actively written them down, but somebody asks you about the story and they ask you these things and you already have them internalized, that's the goal. That's the goal of doing the 5 W's. That's the goal of the plot chart, writing out the plot charts, which we haven't done in a while, but is a good habit. You do the plot chart, you do the emotional, the narrative emotion chart. You work on these things and you build these skills and then you internalize them. So you don't have to actively think about them all the time. It's just something that you're doing automatically without making any effort. And that's really important and that's really helpful. And that's something that I hope everyone is working on and getting good at doing is so that you can pick up a text of the Bible and you can read it. You can read a chapter or a couple chapters and somebody can say, hey, who was in that story? And without having to think too hard, you can say, oh, well, these characters were here. And you can say, okay, well, when did this happen? And you can give them that. And you can give them a basic outline of the plot. And you can tell them how the audience was supposed to respond emotionally to the material that was presented. You can tell them where or when rather when in the storyline of the scriptures this occurs. What are the relevant events around it? And that might require some broader biblical knowledge and just being able to pick up a single text. But that's what we're going for. We want somebody to be able to do the 5 W's without even having to think about it, without having to actively think about that. So that's why, sometimes when we have a more complex story, I'm going to go through those. But sometimes when the story is simpler and shorter like this, we're not going to do that. That's something that everybody has to get good at. You've got to develop that skill. You've just got to build that brain muscle. I know that brains don't really have muscle, but you got to build that brain muscle. You've got to exercise your brain and develop those neural pathways so that your mind is doing this automatically for you, and you don't have to actively be pursuing these data. So, anyways, we are in chapter 5, beginning in verse 6. Okay, so David has been kinged. He's been crowned over all of Israel. And the king and his men advanced to Jerusalem against the Jebusites who lived in the land. The Jebusites said to David, "You cannot invade this place. Even the blind and the lame will turn you back," saying, "David cannot invade this place." Okay, so Jerusalem is an interesting city because it appears that for a long time, the city of Jerusalem held out against the Israelites. In fact, when we look at the story of the priest and his concubine, back at the end of Judges, okay, where he wanted to go, and his servant said, "Well, let's go stay there. Let's go stay in Jebus," because Jebus was the original name of Jerusalem. Jebus was named after being the city of the Jebusites. So into the time of the kings, there were people who the Jebusites had resisted, and eventually, I believe the Israelites took it back, and then somewhere along the line, the Jebusites recaptured the city. Okay, and I've said I don't know how many times, in this, as I've been preaching, that Jerusalem was an eminently defensible city. It was an extremely defensible city. And that's why the Jebusites were able to resist, even into the kingship of Saul and now into the kingship of David. They were able to hold out because Jerusalem is a very, very defensible city. It is a mighty fortress. And the Jebusites, they weren't lying. If David had tried a conventional attack, maybe the blind and the lame could have held them back, because it is not an easy place to attack. Historically, that has been true over and over and over again. It is a difficult fortress to invade. But what happens? David captured the fortress of Zion. That is the city of David. They called it the Fortress of Zion because of Mount Zion there, and it's called the Fortress of Zion. Obviously, look right here. It's called Jerusalem. Now, the king and his men advanced to Jerusalem. Notice they don't call it Jebus here. They're post-dating the name, calling it the name that the Israelites are going to give to it here already. So even though, as far as the narrative goes, this isn't Jerusalem yet, they're calling it Jerusalem. They're not calling it Jebus. Now we see in verse 7, they captured the fortress of Zion, that is the city of David. Okay, so now we have two more names that are added that are that are Israelite names for this place, the fortress of Zion, the city of David. Now, David said, whoever attacks the Jebusite must approach the lame and the blind, who are David's enemies, by going through the water tunnel. For that reason, it is said, the blind and the lame cannot enter this, or cannot enter the palace. Okay, so obviously, that was, according to the NET, when we look at the blind and the lame cannot enter the palace or the house may be a more literal representation. The today's English version says that it's the temple, that it's talking about the Lord's house. And they're saying that this is why it was said that priests who, according to the English version's logic today, or today's English version, according to their logic, that's why that there were restrictions against the blind and the lame being priests, is because of this event that happened here. Now, that does not make any sense. Okay, that does not make any sense. Now, I can't say for certain what the reasoning was behind them making that claim, but it would seem to me that today's English version may have thought that there was some kind of connection, that maybe the laws of the priesthood were written after the Davidic kingdom, which, by the way, is the majority opinion of scholars. It also happens to be wrong. It happens to be a stupid opinion. Evangelical scholars, conservatives, do not accept this. We do not accept this. Anybody who wants to take the Bible seriously, anybody who wants to take Jesus seriously, rejects this, because Jesus says that Moses wrote the material attributed to Moses. You know, so the book of Leviticus was not written after David. The book of Leviticus was written several hundred years before David. So if today's English version is claiming that this was a reference to the blind and the lame not serving in the priesthood, then they are fully in on the documentary hypothesis, the JEDP, if you want to call it that, or the Wellhausen, the Tubingen, the Wellhausen hypothesis, Graf Wellhausen. You'd be totally in on that, believing that, you know, that really, really, you know, the Bible wasn't written until much, much, much later. And this is an explanation. I don't think that's the case. What I think is, it makes a lot more sense to just assume that there was a standing order in Jerusalem that the blind and the lame couldn't enter the palace, and it was because of what was said. Or maybe it was just said that's the case. You know, maybe this was just a saying that was going on in Israel. We don't really know. But to claim that this is somehow a reference to the priesthood and the laws of the priesthood, and this is the reason behind the law and the priesthood, that's not how that works. However, what it should be known is that there is extra material about this in 1 Chronicles that isn't in 2 Samuel. So if you go to 1 Chronicles chapter 11, there's another version of this story. I'm just going to read this rather quickly, and you can take a note of this, or you can listen back if you'd like. But it says, David, verse 4 of chapter 11 of 1 Chronicles, David and his whole army advanced to Jerusalem, that is Jebus. The Jebusites, the land's original inhabitants, lived there. The residents of Jebus said to David, "You cannot invade this place." So David captured the fortress of Zion, that is, the city of David. David said, "Whoever attacks the Jebusites first will become commanding general." So Joab, son of Zeruiah, attacked first and became commander. David lived in the fortress. For this reason, it is called the city of David. He built up the city around it. So from the terrace to the surrounding walls, Joab restored the rest of the city. David's power steadily grew, for the Lord who commanded armies was with him, or the Lord who commands armies was with him. Okay, so what we see here is we've got a pretty standard version of a narrative. Now let's go back here to to hear, which tells us that David conquered the city by going through the water tunnels, and it was Joab who was the one who was the commander. He led the assault, and they go in and they defeat the city and they conquer it. And we have this material. David lived in the fortress, called it the City of David. David built all around it from the terrace inwards. So this is really the same material we get in First Chronicles. And then it says in verse 11, and this is a significant passage right here. King Hiram of Tyre sent messengers to David along with cedar logs, carpenters, and stonemasons. They built a palace for David. David realized that the Lord had established him as king over Israel and that he had elevated his kingdom for the sake of the people Israel. David married more concubines and wives from Jerusalem after he arrived from Hebron. Even more sons and daughters were born to David. These are the names of the children born to him in Jerusalem. Shemua, Shobab, Nathan, Solomon, Ibhar, Elishua, Nepheg, Japhia, Elishama, Eliada, and Eliphelet. Okay, so I've got a baby crying in the background if you can't hear that. So I'm trying to work from home here. I'm helping out my wife. So if the sound quality is, well, the sound quality is less than you're used to, and then you've also got a baby in the background, but anyway, so bear with me here. I'm trying to bear with everything going on. But so we look at this material, and it's pretty clear what we have going on here is this is a story of David, and this is the story of how David began to really come into his own. He's captured Jebus, which was an important city. It was a major city, and it was an extremely defensible city. And they capture the city, and then one of the neighbors, King Hiram of Tyre. Hiram comes from the name Ahiram. I don't know if you can hear that very clearly. Ahiram, which means the exalted brother. But Hiram is the king of Tyre. He's the king of the Sidonians, who are the Lebanese, the Tyrian Sidonians, who are the Lebanese people. So it's modern day Lebanon. And the Lebanese king Hiram, he sends logs, cedar wood. He sends carpenters, stonemasons, and craftsmen, and they go and they build a house for David. And Hiram recognizes the power of David. He recognizes that the Philistines are being driven out. He realizes that Israel is on the ascendancy right now. And so it is in his best interest to be on the side of Israel being on the ascendancy. And he wants to ensure that, you know, that there's not going to be any more expansions from the tribe of Dan, that, you know, the Israelites are going to be good neighbors. And so he does this. And David realized that God had given him strength, God had given him power, God had established him such that the foreigners are coming and paying tribute to David as the king. Now, why is this important? Well, this is important, first of all, to understand the history of Israel. Second of all, it's important to understand, you know, who David was as a king and the kind of impact that David had on the world around him. But lastly, and most importantly, this is important because this points us to Jesus. This points us to Jesus and the fact that Jesus, the son of David, the greater than David, the Messiah, that Jesus is going to come and Jesus is going to establish his throne in Jerusalem. He is going to set up his throne in Jerusalem. He is going to have a palace in Jerusalem. He is going to have a house in Jerusalem. And Jesus is going to rule from that city. And the foreigners will come. The foreigners will come and they will pay tribute and they will show honor to Jesus as the king. In fact, the book of Zechariah is clear that any nation, that if some of the surrounding nations, or if any nation, in fact, doesn't come to the Lord for the Feast of Tabernacles, that nation won't receive rain. And so it is going to be compulsory worship when Jesus rules and reigns. You will go to church, okay? No more of hanging out with Pastor Pillow. You know, like when it's time for church, you're going to go to church when Jesus is ruling and reigning. You will go to worship, and that's going to happen during the millennial reign. There is not going to be an alternative. You are going to serve Jesus because Jesus will be the ruler of the entire world, ruling and reigning from Jerusalem. And this text points us to that. It points us to the fact that David established his kingdom in Jerusalem and foreigners came and paid honor to him, and that Jesus is going to establish his kingdom in Jerusalem and foreigners are going to come and pay homage and honor to him. David, again, continues to lay out a basic concept of who Jesus is and helps us to understand Jesus and what Jesus's ministry and what Jesus's reign is going to look like. And again, we see more parallels, and I've preached on this several times, but we see these parallels between Jesus's first coming and his second coming. And I think that we recognize that David was anointed king long before he was the king in Jerusalem. He was crowned in Hebron. So he was born, he was anointed a king by Samuel, you know, and he was persecuted just like Jesus was said to be the king by the Magi, and he was persecuted by Herod, and Jesus continued to be persecuted until he was finally driven out, and he was persecuted, and that's the same thing that happened with Jesus and David. Their lives parallel each other, but then Jesus is crowned in Hebron over the tribe of Judah, similarly to how Jesus is the king over the church today, and finally Jesus will be the king of the entire universe, just as David was king over all Israel. The parallels are amazing. The parallels are astounding. I've got a baby crying, so I've got to get going. But I hope this Bible study was helpful. I hope it was insightful, and I thank you for joining us. Thank you. God bless.